Kyler Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
He misses the foul.
He's out. No way. A pitch clock violation.
Wow, a violation. He is out at home.
God.
That is strike three. How about that? So we see that here on opening day. Like, Raph, you can believe it.
I'll tell you, when it rains, it pours.
Got to be in that box addressing the pitcher with 8 seconds to go.
Wow.
He's still not back to the dugout. He's in a state of shock. Here's the violation now.
See, this doesn't make sense to me, though, because he already looked at the pitcher. The pitcher's not even ready to throw. See, this is the problem with this rule. If the pitcher is not ready, how can you charge it to the hitter if the pitcher is not ready at 8 seconds? Absolutely ridiculous.
The rule says you must be. Got to be looking at the pitcher, addressing the pitcher.
But the pitcher wasn't ready.
He may not be. The catcher might not be. Catcher might not be in a crouch.
Yeah.
We saw that earlier in spring training on a violation.
That's where you throw, the people up at the top sometimes have all these rules, but then they don't apply them all equally. Because the pitcher right there was not looking at home. He was not ready to pitch.
Oh, good. Get ready for a year's worth of whining from Kevin Youkilis.
They're being mean to the batters.
Oh, God. I love it. These new pitch clock measures, pitchers, batters, any of these whiny players, draconian measures for all is what I say. Welcome back to the final 90 minutes of Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. But much like nuts and gum together at last, it's Chris Gasper and Kevin Youkilis together at last because they're in lockstep.
Oh, no, Rafael Devers got wrong.
The only entertaining thing that really happened in that hell game on Thursday, another lost opener for your Boston Red Sox and Alex Cora, who I believe is now 0-5.
He is 0-5.
In home openers?
He's 0-5 in home openers. That is correct.
All fire and brimstone heading into this new season. I'm going to have the guys prepared. We're going to show you. I'm going to show you. Loss. And really, a type of loss, before we get into the pitch clock thing, Chris, I don't know how you felt about this. It was like the worst of all worlds for the Red Sox. Well, people don't really believe in this year, but we're going to show you. And one of our strengths is going to be our pitching staff that can throw strikes. How many walks? Our bullpen. Our bullpen's going to be a strength. No, not so much. Ryan Brazier still on this team. Why? Sure, the lineup had some pop in it, but it was not a good day for your Boston Red Sox, and I think indicative of the season that is to come. Obviously, 161 to go. You can't put too much into one game. One game does not a season make, for sure, but it just looked like the same old Red Sox, especially as it pertains to the pitch clock. 3 hours, 10 minutes for that mess the other day? When you're seeing the Mets-Marlins last night played in 2 hours, 9 minutes.
Wow.
A crisp 209. That's how it should be.
And they were like home runs. There was a big Jazz Chisholm home run in that game.
Yeah, and this is what the people want, so I don't care. I'd like to think that the umps, when they come out of their locker room, or a clubhouse going into these games, whether it's at Fenway Park.
This is what I really want. Let's go back to the days of Joe West. Let's have even more umpire egos and effect on the game. That sounds fun.
They tap a sign that says, be heavy-handed today. Really? Let's go, guys. And I know this contradicts how I felt about the umps and officials in all sports. But this time, because you need to fix your boring sport, you have to be heavy-handed. Batters, pitchers, whatever. It's for the greater good. This is why I want them to have these draconian measures. Oh, you're not ready? You're trying to adjust your jock? Out. Oh, you're not? Strike. Ball. I don't care. Call it all. Hurry up.
So I'll say this. It's funny. What you're saying is, when it comes to these rules, it almost feels like you're sort of saying, and I feel like I've heard this before with baseball, with some sort of initiative they thought was like a really great idea. It's almost like you're saying, this time it counts.
Oh, I didn't
with these rules.
I didn't mind that with the All-Star game.
This time it counts.
I didn't mind that.
So let me clarify my position here. I get it. You know, Felger and Maz, you know, they're like the Siths from the Star Wars universe. They only deal in absolutes. It's black or white. There's no gray. I'm not anti-pitch clock. I like the pitch clock. I'm glad they brought in the pitch clock. Major League Baseball needed the pitch clock. What I don't like is I don't like the way the rule is being interpreted and administered when it comes to the batters. Because, again, it's a pitch clock. It's about initiating play, which only the pitcher can do. So this cockamamie thing about the batter having to be ready, and I think batters should be ready, but again, it's the interpretation of what ready is. I mean, Rafael Devers has 2 feet in the box. He'd already looked at the pitcher. He'd made eye contact with him with 10 seconds to go. He puts his head down briefly. He has 2 feet in the box. He's tapping the bat on the plate. That's ready. That's good enough, especially for a pitcher who's staring down at the Fenway lawn and not ready to throw the pitch. And then you're going to call him out on that? That's a strikeout. So as a fan, I get robbed of seeing one of the few people on the Red Sox I actually want to watch bat by bureaucratic baseball leanings. That's not entertaining to me. I'm sorry. I think there's other ways to speed it up without going from one extreme to the other. They went from one extreme, which was, and this is why I agree with you, they needed the pitch clock. It was boring. The games were too long. But now we're at this point where it's like, well, damn the competition. Damn the game. We're just going to get through this as fast as we absolutely can. If it competitively impacts the game and competitive integrity of the game, we don't care. It doesn't matter. And we're going to give these umpires, these blowhard umpires that we spent the last 20 years trying to break them and break them of their stupid Joe West habits, we're going to give them even more power. You think that guy's not ready? Don't give him even a split second of leeway. Ring him up. That's not good for baseball. I'm sorry. It's not. It might be satisfying right now, but in the long run, it's not good for the sport.
Well, it needs to happen, though, right now, because these players need to learn. The biggest babies in all of pro sports are Major League Baseball players, and you say, you know, the people were robbed of that Devers at-bat in the eighth inning. If you hung around in that frozen hill for the eighth inning, you deserve to see him get rung up like that. You should have went home by that point anyway. But they came back. The vibes. They deserve to lose. And you deserve to see that happen. And you said, you know, you used the example, well, it should be more like the NFL play clock.
The play clock, yeah.
Which gets down to zero. I hate that. Zero means zero. I hate that they give him the extra beat. No beats. I want that to be enforced.
I just want
too.
The extra beat for the batter, because I think it's not fair. When you look at it, the batter, again, cannot initiate play. The batter can be ready all he wants, but he can't. And you're also saying the batter has to be ready. I don't understand why it's 8 seconds. Like, what the hell does that have to do with the pitcher throwing? You're also, like, fabricating, I think, you are fabricating repercussions for the batter that you don't need to do. If the guy's not ready and I throw the pitch, you're out. If I throw a strike, you're out. If you're not ready to swing and you're over there adjusting your jock and I throw it a strike, see ya. Ring him up. I'm not sitting there saying that the pitcher has to wait for the batter to be ready, but why does the pitcher get, what is it, 20 seconds with a guy on base and 18 or 20 and 15? So why does the pitcher get 15 seconds with no one on base and the batter gets half that time? That makes no sense.
Oh, I'd like less for the pitchers, too. The only way they're going to learn is through draconian measures and things like that with Rafael Devers in the eighth inning. And maybe they soften as the season goes along. I hope that they don't. But I think it's the only way they're going to fix this game. And I like it because, you know, it makes some of these players angry. It makes people like you angry. Like,
it does make me angry.
The rules, well, this is part of the enjoyment for me. It brings panic. I mentioned the greatest example of the pitch clock so far, Seattle and Cleveland.
Like this one. Go ahead.
Oh, now this
is one I'm in favor of because it was the pitcher.
This is the best. You can only find, unfortunately, the shortened version on YouTube. But, you know, I have like a MLB package, you know, a taste of it, basically. They give you this first week. So I was up late, watched this, came home from the Bruins game. And I forget the name of the Cleveland reliever that comes in.
It's James, I can't pronounce it. It's James Karinchak?
Karinchak, yeah. So he comes in, scoreless game, eighth inning, gets caught, called for a pitch clock violation, and the crowd immediately jumps on him. So this game's in Seattle. Walks a couple of batters. He's a complete puddle.
He threw one to the backstop.
Oh, it was
this.
The best. Just pure panic. I can't do my routine. The clock. Two on. Next batter. Bomb. 3-0 game. And the best part was, if you haven't seen this, like, it's tough to find online because they shorten the thing. In the time, you can hear the crowd in Seattle, like a collegiate home basketball crowd.
Oh. Count.
5-4. Panic. Ball. Another walk. That. Oh, yes. So panic and anger. These new rules bring that.
Panic, anger, and spite. That's your holy trinity.
You're going to win me back, baseball. You're going to win me back. You might have me. And these shortened games, again, Miami and the Mets yesterday, 209. Oh, you get these games in around that, 209. Well, you're going to win me back, 310. Oh, how Red Soxian of that. And so, you know, outside of the rules, what did you make of that game and that performance?
Yeah, I thought it was a bad day for Chaim Bloom because he's clutched these middle relievers, guys like Zach Kelly, who is a guy who is 28 years old. I mean, he's not young. This is not a young prospect. Zach Kelly, who went out there and was bad. Caleb Ort, who's 31 years old. And Ryan Brazier, who is the Supreme Court Justice of Red Sox relievers, because he has a job for life, apparently. He is now 35 years old and will be 36 in August. And he was brutal in terms of the three stolen bases. So those three guys came in and were all terrible. And those are guys that Chaim kept on the 40-man roster all offseason when you were losing guys to Rule 5 and there were other things you could do. And this brings me back to this big picture point about the Chaim Bloom Red Sox. Are they capable of deviating from what they believe the right course of action is, from what the right protocol is? Because a lot of these guys are guys who the underlying stats on them, a spin rate, velocity, batting average, balls in play, stuff like that, you look at and say, this guy should be better. But you know what? They're not. They are what they are. They're not better. I don't care what the numbers say. This is not 2 + 2 = 4. It's not adding up. There's some variable that the 33 analytics guys are missing, and Chaim Bloom is missing on these three guys. So can you just look at it and say, we're wrong. We're following the right process and protocol. We should be getting this result, but we're getting a bad result. We have to adjust. Or do you just put your head down and keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result? Because for me, there's a fine line between being patient and staying the course and being obstinate and refusing to recognize that what you're doing, as much as you believe in it and you believe it should work, doesn't work.
Yeah, his whole ethos doesn't feel very malleable to me. You know,
he's a strict ideologue, and that's the problem.
All right, your thoughts on the Sox and opening day and the rules. You must follow the rules. Ah, yes. Hey, for once in my life, I am for the rules.
You must learn your rules.
Hell, I'd put almost kind of like a zapping dog collar device on some of these dudes. So like, are you going to take your time? Come on, hurry up, let's go.
You sound like Dwight Schrute. You have to learn your rules or you get eaten by a bear.
Yeah. Oh, for that too. You have to have a bear on site at all these stadiums too. You're not ready to, ah! 617-779-0985. Back after this on Casper and Murray.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
This is Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
And this is Gasper and Murray. On Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
James Karinchak is not afraid to challenge baseball styles with uniforms. Now the 0-2 pitch. Nope, time called. And that'll be a violation on Karinchak with the pitch clock. That'll be a ball, so it's 1-2. Karinchak, of course, last year worked more slowly than maybe any pitcher in the game, but now the pitch all the way to the backstop, just a bit high. This will be pitch number 7 of the at-bat, and it is a check swing on a pitch in the dirt. That should be ball 4, and it is. Zunino is arguing with the home plate umpire Mark Carlson, and here comes manager Terry Francona out of the third base dugout. It's a leadoff walk to Crawford, and you know he'll be running at some point. Seattle already with 1 steal tonight, and Karinchak very easy to run on. Cleveland felt like that was a foul tip that went in and out of the glove of Zunino, and it certainly was. We just saw a replay. That was a foul tip off the bat of Crawford that Zunino couldn't hang on to. So how in the world did they give him first base?
Well, I don't think Carlson ever heard it because he asked for an appeal from the third base umpire.
Not sure how a swing and a foul tip results in a walk. This is why we need the microphones on home plate umpires to explain to everybody what's the call. That's a foul ball. How have they given Crawford a walk?
And then the next batter came up, three-run bomb. He's really crapping his pants out there, Bob. That's the Cleveland call. The eighth-inning disaster and how the pitch clock can work. It was perfect. Shows the true potential of pitch clock, in my opinion, in terms of entertainment, separating stud pitchers from the weak-willed weenies. This thing could potentially ruin careers of pitchers, and I love that. That's that already. Oh, yes. Give me that pitch clock. And if you can't find enjoyment or funny in a sequence like that with that guy, you know, panicking, turning into a puddle in front of our eyes and that crowd jumping all over him and you're still against the pitch clock, you suck. 617-779-0985. Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports. Mike and Woburn, I'm sure you have thoughts on the rules and how the umpires are laying down the law so far in this early season.
Yeah, you know, I just want to thank Chris for being on the side of good and light in this argument. You know, this is very disappointing to me because we had the umps on the run. We have minor leagues that were implementing, you know, automated balls and strikes. We were on our way. We literally had these guys on the precipice of irrelevance. Like, they were all going to be singing with Joe West in country western bars. You know, and not ruining our sport. And you, Felger, and freaking Maz are like Eddie Murphy in Coming to America, handing Mortimer and Randolph that big bag of cash. You're letting them back into the game. You guys are the worst. You've made them relevant again. You've given them another cudgel to insert themselves into the game and bludgeon us with their, like, you know, these guys are the worst. You know, Jim, if you really want to get your rocks off on, you know, umpires, come down to one of the youth baseball games and you can watch some henpecked husband call four balks on an 11-year-old in an inning and not tell him what he's doing wrong. Like, henpecked. These guys are the worst. Why are we taking the bats out of the hands of guys we're paying? I'm not paying to see Adam Hamari ring some guy up on a fake strike. I'm paying to watch baseball. Why are we doing the – why? I just don't understand. I go to the tape. Tape leagues average 2 to 2.5 hours a game. Why? Because they cut out all the ancillary BS. They don't have cockamamie pitch clocks or any of these other gimmicks. Figure out what the tape is doing. Do that in the major leagues. And if you really need to have, like, something to quicken the game, I guess you could have a pitch clock added if a guy's taking too long. Have a robot tell you, this guy's taking too long. We're going to start turning on a light now. You guy behind the plate, you shut up. When the light goes on, that's when you make your call. You don't get to tell us when the call is. Like, the thought of actual hitters not getting to hit because an ump is injecting himself into this thing is ridiculous. Make the strike zone bigger. Do something else. There's multiple ways that you could, quote-unquote, quicken the game without turning it into clock ball.
All right, maybe they could lower the mound. Maybe they could expand the strike zone.
But I like that clock ball.
But for now, these are the rules, and someone has to enforce the rules, and it happens to be these umpires. Look, I don't like when umpires truly make it about themselves. We shouldn't know the name of Joe West. We shouldn't know the name of Andrew Hernandez.
Yeah.
Buckner, what's the other one?
C.B. Buckner.
C.B. Buckner. We shouldn't know. Like, I hate that I know these names.
Well, you really don't, but you kind of do.
But, you know, because
I'm finishing them for you. You don't really know the names.
Look, it's I didn't sleep well last night. The brain's not working the way that it probably should. But all that, be that as it may, someone's got to be the dicks. The umps are the dicks. And you need to fix your game And so these have to be the ones to do it. And you know what? I certainly don't want the robot. There was a time I was like, because I hated the ump so much. Replace it with the robots.
Robot umps. Bring it on.
We're done with that. No. I hate the robots. And so I don't want the robots
taking any umps.
I am so against the robots taking any more human jobs. So F the robots. So no, this is how it has to be. And I am for it. Enforce these rules. Take your time. You're out.
I am pro robot. I want robot umps. I want robot DJs. I want robot sports talk radio hosts. Bring it all on. That's my thing. I think
you might get your wish. You were off that day. Radio GPT. It's a real thing. That's been.
Is
invented.
It really? I think that there should be. You know. I think there should be robots that are able to do promotional appearances. I think robots should do all of this stuff.
I've come to the conclusion, and we might. You know, this might just happen because everything has been so accelerated in this hell world we now live in. I just want to live long enough that I can kill a sentient robot with my bare hands. I really mean that. Like,
this is terrible.
Like, there, because what's going to happen is, and this part I don't want to live long enough for, like, there's eventually going to be humans that say, like, we need to treat the robots like our neighbors.
Yes, exactly.
And that I can't deal with. And so when we do get to that point.
Robots are people too, Jim.
If I am still alive, I hope to commit robot murder. I would kill a sentient robot with my own hands, use this audio against me when I have to be on this robot trial. Years from now, that's
press,
all I hope I live long enough
press
for.
Press 4 if you've committed regicide.
But I am just like you. No, you're not.
If you know the name of the monarch you've murdered.
Oh, I hate them so. Harry in the car on the pitch clock. Go ahead, Harry.
Hey guys. Great show. Chris, I'm with you, sort of. I hate authority overstepping their bounds in any aspect of life, but when they're overstepping their bounds on, like, you know, $30 million big-ass babies, it's a choice between a giant douche and a turd sandwich, you know what I mean? I'm siding with the old authority, the ones, the evil I know, you know what I mean? I don't care for whoever, Carnacki or whatever on the mound, crying because he needs more time to, what, adjust his pad or something?
I'm with you on that, by the way, though. Let me be clear. I'm with you on that. The pitchers, like, penalize the pitchers. I don't mind that. Like, I'm not – and that's the point I'm trying to clarify from yesterday. I'm not anti-pitch clock, and I'm not anti-punishing the pitchers. I just think they put these batters in a situation that makes no sense. Like, why do they have 8 seconds fewer than the person who's initiating play, and why do we have this nebulous designation of ready? That we're letting the umpires, you know, the guys that he called, you know, douches, decide, well, I didn't think that guy was ready. Let me put it like this, Jim. You and I both, you know, I'll say drive a certain way. Would you like to be out on these streets and they're like, oh, Jim Murray, 36 miles an hour. That's a ticket.
No, but I know with my aggressive driving habits, if I get nabbed. So be it.
But it kept happening. So it's like every time you commuted to the station every day, you got one ticket for driving 36, another for driving 56, another for driving 61. And someone said, hey, these are the rules. These are just the rules. We're just enforcing the rules.
Then I would change my behavior. This is all I'm looking
for. You would?
Yep.
Okay. I give you credit. You're consistent.
Just like I want these players to change.
You're a consistent man. I give you a lot of. I don't believe you, but you're consistent in your answer and you're consistent in your logic, and I have to applaud that.
All right. More to come here. You want to join us? Probably circle back to the Patriots here. This weird week for them. The owner, the coach, the iciness between the two of Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick. We'll touch back on that next here on Gasper and Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
Returns in a moment on the spot. Big Jim Murray.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I expect it to happen as soon as this year. I think we've made the commitments as an organization, and I think... we have a lot of talent, and, you know, some wonderful young men from last year and a couple in the weeds from before, and it's a chance for them to grow and hopefully come together and the team comes together. I think, you know, this on these young quarterbacks, the good ones in the second year have usually grown a great deal, and I think I'm a big fan of Mac Jones.
Patriots owner Robert Kraft at the NFL owners meetings in Phoenix earlier this week. I mean, he's a fan of Mac Jones. I want to say that like Al Pacino in The Devil's Advocate. I'm a fan of Mac. I'm a fan of man. I'm a humanist. She's got a great ass. What a career that guy's had, too. Just yell your lines here towards the end. Here's millions. But he's a fan of Mac. I'm a fan of Mac. Is Bill? Certainly didn't seem that way because he won't even say the kid's name and hasn't really since, oh, I don't know, like last August. So where is this headed? Could this open up the door for Bailey Zappe? Do you think we're going to see a real QB competition this offseason and into training camp?
I don't think so. I think they just want to tweak Mac a little bit, you know, push him, give him a little bit of a push, make it so he doesn't feel comfortable. So he doesn't feel comfortable like he did last year to ream out his offensive coaches on the sideline and go outside the organization and ask for help. I think this is it's going to be a lot of tweaking by Bill. Unless he really, I will say this, I give Bill credit though. If he honestly believes Bailey Zappe's a better option, I don't think he'll hesitate to replace Mac.
Would he run into problem with ownership, though, because of that? Because the owner's such a fan of Mac, they draft him high? Or does he have the opportunity to do this because, well, he does have the boss and the owner?
It would be fascinating, right, at this point? Because on the one hand, you look at it and you say, and what Robert was saying in that press conference out in Phoenix, he was still saying, I believe in Bill. You know, Bill makes the decisions and all that. And you would look at it and say, okay, well, when he's done this stuff in the past, you know, it's worked out. The whole Brady Bledsoe thing, all right, we got to go with Bill. But then on the other hand, you look at the disastrous decision he made last year and what the last four seasons have been, and you sort of say, okay, am I getting the same type of decision I got on Brady Belichick, or am I getting another Matt Patricia as offensive coordinator decision? I think that would be the ultimate litmus test for Kraft and whether there's like actual change in the way they evaluate things and make decisions, or whether he still just says, okay, I'm going to rubber stamp these Bill football decisions because you know what? He's right. The last 25 years have been really good. And yeah, go right ahead. Bailey Zappe's the guy. Even though I've been touting up Mac Jones and I went on Fox Business and I said, I believe in Mac Jones. I think he's a really good young quarterback, but Bill doesn't. And Bill's the football guy. So now we're rolling with Bailey.
So what were your main takeaways, though, from this week between these two? It does feel like there's iciness. I think even, you know, I think it's fair to read in where Bill wore the pin, you know, right after it was announced from Robert Kraft, this initiative to stop Jewish hate, which he had donated $25 million to. The pins come out. It's something that's very important to Robert. He's wearing the pin, like, below his rib cage. You could barely notice the thing. And anytime he was in frame, you really couldn't see that he was wearing it. There was only a few photos floating around online where you can see it, and it's like, what are you doing there? That's childish. That, to me, I think is almost like a F you to Robert. I think it's fair to read into the relationship between these two right now and say that it is just that. It is icy. So can that be repaired?
Yeah, by winning. You know, everybody got along. I think it's easier for Robert to tolerate Bill, and it's easier for Bill to maybe tolerate some of the questions from Robert over the years or having to explain things to him when they're winning. But now that they're not winning, you know, if I can find it here, there's a great quote that I saw, and it's attributed to a Roman historian who said, this is the unfair thing about war. Not that this is war, but victory is claimed by all, failure to one alone. Everybody with the Patriots was rushing to claim their piece of victories in the Super Bowls, but no one wants to own this failure from the last 3 years. So it's, we don't spend enough. It's, oh, we spent in free agency. We spent all this money. We didn't get the bang for our buck. I think Mac Jones is a great young quarterback. Mac Jones can play quarterback in this league. It's all buck passing, and it's happening in real time. And it's one of those things where I think you're seeing some media members and some fans choose a side here.
With that, let's go to Anthony in Waltham. Let's talk about Mac Jones next here on Casper Murray. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, great show. Here's a question. If Mac Jones has the same outburst with Billy O'Brien, is it fair to say he's a coach killer?
I'm just wondering. Billy O'Brien will light him up on the sideline like you won't believe. I dare Mac Jones to have that type of outburst. If Billy O'Brien didn't hesitate to get in Tom Brady's face in Tom Brady's prime, what do you think he's going to do to Mac on the sideline?
I mean, most of us remember that famous clip when it was the Tyquan Thornton.
Tyquan Underwood. Not running the route that Brady thought he should have run against the Washington, then different team name.
I mean, and it's just like a F-bomb fest between the two of them on the sideline.
And Brady wasn't even going after Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, right.
He was going after the wide receiver. He was going after Chad O'Shea, the wide receivers coach, and basically being like, get your guys to run the bleeping right route. So, and then O'Brien heard that and went in and just went in on Brady. So it wasn't even like a thing like, I didn't like your play call or there was some issue there. It didn't even have anything to do with O'Brien. It was Brady complaining about the wide receivers and complaining to Chad O'Shea, another coach. And all of a sudden, O'Brien came swooping in and was like, you got something to say?
Yeah,
like,
right.
let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it, big boy. Like, you know, so I think Bill O'Brien has mellowed a little bit. But if Mac pulls those histrionics on him, he hasn't mellowed that much.
One thing I would side with Mac Jones on at this point is that, you know, this whole new title for Joe Judge. Look, he's still getting paid by the New York Giants. We understand why he's here. But for him to get this role of assistant coach or assistant to the head coach,
yeah,
you know, assistant to the regional manager, whatever. I brought this up before and we talked about it on Felger and Maz. Like, you know, say Bill's sick, gets COVID, whatever.
Yeah.
So for a week or a couple of weeks, he's the head coach in title, and Mac Jones has to deal with him again after those two were going at each other last offseason or throughout the season. And then I just think that's a bad look, Chris. You know, again, I don't side with Mac Jones on much. I think he handled himself pretty poorly this last season as it went on. He needed to eventually bury that. But to have to still see that guy's mug and potentially have him be the head coach for a week or so if anything happened with Bill, sickness, whatever, that's terrible. How does that help Mac Jones?
How does it help the team as well? And I would also take it a step further and say, okay, how does Robert Kraft let that happen? How does he let this guy get the assistant head coach title? It's like, Bill, you can keep your guy.
Yeah,
you can
right.
be like a Brett Bielema consultant or something.
So is the title given as almost another FU to Robert? You know,
I don't know. But if that. I'm Robert, I'm like, no, this guy's not the assistant head coach. He can stay on the staff. We're not paying him. He's your friend. You like him. And he can help us with special teams. He's good at that. But he has not demonstrated he's good at anything else as an NFL coach. I mean, he wasn't good as a wide receivers coach. There were issues that year with the wide receivers.
Special teams, that's it. That's all he should be doing.
What was it? I normally remember this quote off the top of my head, but I can't. But John Mara saying about Daniel Jones, we've done everything in our power to screw this kid up.
Yeah.
And then that right after they fired and now Daniel Jones made the playoffs with a different coach. How bad the offense and Mac Jones looked last year? This is kind of where I'm coming from on the, like, talk a big game but not do anything. Like, if you're really making substantive changes, then why is Joe Judge the assistant head coach?
You're
like,
right.
If you're really, like, saying, like, Bill, look, we got to change some stuff here. We're not doing this. Okay, yeah, okay. Now Joe Judge is the assistant. You get to keep Joe Judge as your assistant head coach? And he's running around at the NFL owners' meetings following you. He could be in meetings with players
that was
like
the other
Patricia
thing.
Was?
Yeah.
Why?
To read that he was out in Phoenix for this, like, again, he's been empowered here. Like, he might not be getting any extra money. The Giants are paying him. But with this title, I'm with you 1,000% on this. Like, if Robert was really making big sweeping changes, that would not happen.
No. I mean, you'd say, like, no, you can't do that. He can be involved with special teams because we know he's good at that, and we'll give him some role there. But, no, we're not giving him – you know, I would sit there and say, you said titles don't matter. He doesn't need this title. We'll keep him on staff. That should be good enough.
Yeah. What else? Anything else left over from the owners' meetings? Anything Bill said? His defiance about the last 25 years? I think that's just an old guy letting it slip. I think the older you get, the less F's you give, and he just told you the truth there.
Yeah, that he thinks it was mostly him.
Yeah.
For that period of time. I do want to go back to what Robert Kraft said, not at this owners' meetings, but last year, because I thought this one was kind of interesting in terms of how he dealt about, and I don't know, I'm assuming we don't have this cut, so I'm just going to read it, but
sure.
It's from last year. And he says, I'm a big fan of Mac Jones. You see how hard he works. He wants everything to go right. He puts the time and energy and his personality as a team guy. So we have a chance. Now, here's the key part. Without a good coach and a good quarterback, no matter how good the other players are, I don't think you can win consistently. Hopefully, I believe we have both. An outstanding coach, so praising Bill there, and a good young prospect at quarterback. That was what he said last year. in terms of Mac Jones and Bill Belichick, right? So he clearly believed that they were on the brink of something. And he still, I think, remains resolute in his support of Mac Jones. So he still thinks Mac Jones is that guy. Does Bill think Mac Jones is that guy? Does Bill look at Mac Jones and say, we have a good young quarterback or not?
No, I think he resents him. Even if he thinks the ability might be there, I think there's resentment on behalf of Bill in that he made Bill look bad because he wouldn't deal with those two coaches he saddled him with last year. Given how Bill has run this operation and how he handles himself and looks at himself, he looked at Mac as the problem last year, not the two coaches he put into those roles, I think.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I just think it's interesting because I only say this because I don't think this thing can work if Bill's not committed to Mac Jones. Like, Bill has to be committed to him. He has to believe in him. And I wonder if he does. You know, everything aside, like being annoyed about the way he complained about the coaching and going outside the building, but just from a pure talent standpoint, does he think the kid has it? Does he think he has it? Does he think he can win with him? And at what level does he think he can win with him? And I honestly don't know the answer to that. I don't. But if he doesn't believe in him the way that the owner believes in him, then it's not going to matter who the offensive coordinator is because there's going to be a problem there. Bill's going to feel like he has his hands tied with a quarterback that's not really good enough and can't really get the job done, and that will be an issue.
And it could all be fixed if they just went and traded for Lamar Jackson. Poof, just like that.
I agree.
You got your buzz back. You're relevant again. You're not being taken off primetime games. You're in the mix for the AFC crown at the very least. That's all you got to do. It's the equivalent of like 1997 Jim walking into, like a suck bar like Trinity, starved for a doing, and a Carmen Electra lookalike comes up to me and says, you know, yeah, we could go home and we'd get into the doing. And then 1997 Jim going, nah, I'm just going to hang with my buddies here. I'm going to go outside and have a teriyaki stick at 201. You have a nice night, ma'am. That's what's that like. You have it. He wants to come here. Meek Mill texted Robert Kraft. You know, Lamar Jackson would like to be in New England. Nah. Now, you know, I know I'm hot. Ready to go home with you. Time for a doing. Nah, I'm good. I'm just going to have a few more beers, hang with my buddies. It boggles the mind, Chris. It makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's one of those things, too. I know there are some legitimate football concerns about Lamar Jackson. But I think, again, and this is the part of it for me where I fully acknowledge, like, Bill's a great coach. I think if Bill got together with Lamar Jackson, I think he could take somebody like that to another level. And everything could work the way it used to. Maybe not to six Super Bowls like Brady, but you definitely would be back in contention. So what's the harm in doing that? Is it just a pride thing for the organization, whether it's Robert or Bill? They just don't want to do that because it's like been there, done that with a really talented quarterback? Or
no, it's simply a cost thing, I think, more than anything else, I tend to think. You know, and Robert also bringing up, and maybe this was one of the ones that was off the record, like the draft picks. So let's play your game like you used to do with the Celtics, you know, when Danny Ainge was here. I don't know. Apply some of these first-round draft picks. You're going to be sad to get rid of Malcolm Brown or
Sony Michel
or Isaiah Wynn or N'Keal Harry. Like, please, like, attach the names to them.
That's a great point.
The first round picks aren't that precious.
I like what you're doing there.
You know? Come on.
I like this.
All right. Well, with that, we'll get into five questions for Chris Gasper. Nothing to do with sports. I don't think we've done this in like a month. So we'll get to that next before we get into the final half hour of the show coming up here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
And this is Gasper and Murray.
I got five questions from Chris Gasper of the Globe. I got five questions that got nothing.
Been like over a month since we've done this, mostly thanks to the Bruins preempting this show for most of the month of March. They have another matinee game coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon, but let's do it. Five questions for Chris Gasper that have nothing to do with sports. Question number one, Chris, you have just arrived in hell. There is only one TV, What show is permanently stuck on Sid TV?
Oh, I think you know the answer to this one. I would say The Simpsons. Has to be The Simpsons.
You're in hell, though. It's the show you don't want to watch.
Oh, it's the show I don't want to watch?
Yeah. It's not heaven,
hell?
It's hell.
Oh, I see where you're going with that. What show would I not want to watch? Jeez, that's a tough one. I'm trying to think. What show?
You hear the theme song, it irks you. You don't get it because other
Dharma
people...
Dharma and Greg.
Oh, that's a bad one.
Dharma and Greg.
That's a bad
show. So annoying.
Show.
You triggered me with the theme song.
Yeah.
Dharma and Greg. That's it. Yep.
Yeah, mine would be Impractical Jokers, which I understand is wildly popular. I get such a visceral reaction if that show is on in the background for more than like 10 seconds. I don't get it. There's the one guy, I think it's the fat one with the goatee. His laugh, it's like nails on a chalkboard. I just don't understand the popularity of that show. Impractical Jokers is the show that's on TV in hell. Chris, what is the most superior cheese of all the cheeses?
Oh, that's it. I'm not a big cheese person. I'm actually going to go off the board here. Tap into my Greek roots. Feta.
That is a good time. Good in a salad. Good in a wrap. I will go with my Italian side and say Pecorino Romano. But it tastes like feet. That's the point. And it smells like feet, too. But I like the pungent, saltier, hard cheeses. Pecorino Romano, I think, is the most superior of all the cheeses. What do you keep in your center console, Chris, in that fancy car of yours?
Oh, let's see. Coins for the meter, because I'm old. I know you can pay with the credit card. I have hand sanitizer. I have some lotion. You get a little ashy from time to time. I have lip balm and a bunch of dry cleaning receipts.
Yeah, there's a million receipts.
Oh, and batteries. I have batteries in there.
Batteries?
Yeah.
For
like when I, you know, when I was, before I used my iPhone, I would use a recorder, a voice recorder. And I always wanted batteries in case I ran out of batteries.
That's voice really recorder. Thinking ahead. Yeah, I got a ton of receipts, some pens. I think my checkbook is in my center console now for whatever. Yeah, because I don't know. Like I'm usually rushing to the post office to get something out, so always late.
Many of our listeners are like, checkbook? It's like Mr. Burns with recycling.
Oh, yeah.
Checkbook.
Right. Like Jasmine always says to me, you're going to the bank to deposit the check? Yeah, because I don't want the robots to win. And I've said this before. When you walk into the bank, you people that work at the bank, you know you can deposit it via your phone. Are you trying to lose your job, you idiot? Don't promote that crap. What are you doing? What else do I keep in? Oh, and baby wipes.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My life has changed with the baby wipes. I'm 20 plus years using those things. You have to have them, especially when you're a hairy mess like I am. Next, will your blue check mark be going away on Twitter, or are you going to pay to keep it?
It's going away. I'm not paying. I don't want to give Elon Musk a dime. This is unbelievable. I can't believe that they're doing this. Twitter has become, it already was a dumpster fire for other reasons. But administratively and from a company standpoint, I mean, Jack Dorsey has to be looking at this like, oh, my God, what did this guy do?
Or he's swimming in a pool of money with models.
That's true. Yeah, it's like the beginning of DuckTales. He's like, yeah, oh, this is great. Like, you know.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah. Dives exactly. Into the gold coins. I don't think it's a change. I mean, it's always been a cesspool, like you say.
Yeah,
so I don't think
yeah.
it's changed all that much. If there is one thing that's irked the hell out of me since Elon has taken it over is... Have you noticed the swipeability thing? Like, it just swipes to the left. I'm just trying to, like, scroll a little bit, and it always moves. And I'm like, No, stop it. It's become more annoying than that. I'm not paying. I'm not putting my credit card on file with them. Like,
by the way, did you see the story yesterday that they found out, like, they had taken all this money out of the checks of Twitter employees for... basically for contributions, for charitable contributions, but then Twitter never actually gave the money to
them?
The charities.
Oh, well, that sounds about right.
Yeah. They just, like, found this out the other day. I was reading this the other day. They never actually made the charitable contribution.
I mean, it mostly sucks anyway. I don't use it as much as I did. It's probably going to be a little bit more difficult to find, like, who's actually giving you, like, actual scoops and news, but...
Could be another Johnny Gaudreau.
Yeah, no, that's all a matter of time before I pull that again. Finally, Chris.
Yes.
WrestleMania tomorrow.
Really?
Yes. When's the last time that you tuned in to a WrestleMania?
Oh, man. I don't
know. If at all.
It's been a while. I mean, I used to watch the Bellas and all that stuff on E!, so I would sort of tangentially know what was going on. The last time I actually tuned into one might have been like I don't know what WrestleMania it was, but it might have been Sky Dome WrestleMania. I think it was Hogan Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, so it's been that long.
Yeah. Yep. I think that I actually... I mean, I've watched wrestling, but like a WrestleMania. I think it was Hogan, Ultimate Warrior. Was that the Sky Dome?
That would have been 1990. April 1st, 1990 at Sky Dome in Toronto.
Yeah.
And yes, Ultimate Warrior and Hogan was the marquee match. That's WrestleMania 6. Wow, that's a win. It's been really a long way back.
I mean, that's the one I remember. I maybe saw one since then, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm going back like 15 years because someone's got to pay for it, and it ain't going to be me.
Exactly.
And now it's a two-night event. You know, so we
it is.
Yeah, we did the props for it with Jimmy Stewart yesterday on Felger and Maz. It's a two-night event now. He said, so yeah, it's like Woodstock. That's a lot of muscle and oil. Man. But either way, if you are tuning into WrestleMania tomorrow, there is going to be a post-WrestleMania show here on these airwaves with our own Jimmy Stewart and Ty Anderson. So tune in and talk some wrestling with the boys tomorrow night. A half hour to go as we have some extra time here before the Bruins matinee game at the Pittsburgh Penguins. An update on that in terms of the roster for the Bees. Get you caught up with that in the headlines, and we'll get into the final 30 minutes or so of the show. Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.